going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White from the Great White North. What's going on, Dylan? How are you?
Not much. I'm doing fine. It's a balmy... mild day here in Toronto, Ontario. The Leafs are hosting the Florida Panthers in the second round of the playoffs of hockey. And Jays are having an off day after they lost the last two games against Cleveland on their homestand, including the Yimmy giving up a grand slam.
Yes. Bullpen's still kind of messy outside of Hoffman, huh?
Yeah. Unfortunately, because Yimmy was lights out until then, overused a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm watching the Celtics slowly allow the Knicks back into a game one of the second round of their own in the NBA playoffs. So we're kind of doing dual sports this whole time while we're working. I'll probably yell in agony or or in triumph. We'll see. But we have the top 500 dynasty update that dropped today on the website. So may not actually, if you're listening to this early enough, because this drops at like 5 o'clock in the morning. So if you're listening to this early enough, the list might not be published yet, but it will be up sometime on Tuesday morning. Of course, we're recording this on Monday evening, only a few hours before the list will be released. But we'll talk about the list a little bit later on in the show and some of the updates. I think this was a valuable month of information and quite a few changes. Like, I think there's just some flux, particularly with some of the younger players and how they're valued and who the top prospects are. And I think that's a product of kind of like an off year and kind of a shallow back end or sort of crop of prospects coming up over the last year or so, that maybe didn't have the high end that we've seen before. But before that, got a couple topics I think we want to talk about, as we always do. We've seen some call-ups already over the obviously first month of the season, some recently, but I think there's still a couple that are looming here, a couple on the pitching side. First one that I sort of wanted to bring up was Bubba Chandler of the Pirates. I think we're starting to hear a gentle roar among baseball fans, prospect fans, Pirates fans of like when's Bubba coming up, because the stuff is pretty good. We're now sort of that Skeens-ish month into the season. He's shown that he can get deep into starts. Secondary stuff looks good. Fastball velocity's holding and climbing. He looks dominant. So at this point, it's like, why waste the bullets? I wouldn't be shocked if he's up in the next like week or so. Next homestand, there's an opportunity. I think Chris Clegg has actually been calling this out for like 3 weeks, is that he had like a date. I think it's sometime, maybe this Friday, something like that. It makes sense just in terms of how he probably lines up. Are the Pirates sort of willing to do it at this point? Perhaps. I just don't know how Super 2 and all that sort of stuff is going to shake out with, the prospect promotion incentive and a lot of players that are, called up a lot earlier than they used to be. So, that Super 2 deadline might end up being a little bit earlier. I don't know. We'll see how this all sort of works out. But I don't know. I think Bubba could be coming up sometime soon. So what's your take and how are you valuing Bubba right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think it totally makes sense for him to come up this weekend. It's a home stand. Skeens is supposed to pitch Monday. Carmen Wodzinski's pitching Sunday, so I could have it be like Bubba and Skeens Sunday, Monday would be pretty pretty slick. He's on the same, exactly like you said, the same path as Skeens, same trajectory, 25 innings, and I think Skeens is a 26 or 27 last time when he came up. Like you said, the velocity's holding up, he's going deeper in games. I'm valuing him like a stud. if he was available in my fab leagues, he called up, he'd probably be the one I'd spend the most money on, I think, more than Yuri, just because they may not baby him. Yuri, they'll maybe kind of bring him along slower. I don't know what I'm basing that on. I just kind of feel that they kind of let Bubba loose the way they let Skeens loose, as much as Skeens was let loose last year. I think more than Painter, I would bid Bubba Chandler. I would pull out the dump truck of cash and spend, because I mean the projections, he's doing what Skeens did last year in AAA, kind of maybe scaled down a bit, but it's like a 12 K per nine, and he's projected to have like a 3.5 ERA or something like that. Just based on how much he's dominating, he keeps the ball on the ground too, so that's gonna keep the ball in the park. It's all kind of lining up nicely. So everyone who has Bubba Chandler in the United League is sitting pretty right now.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. I think he is probably, of the prospects that are in their minor leagues, probably the one that I would imagine is going to garner the highest fab bids if he's available in whatever league that might be. I just feel like Anthony's been rostered and stashed like everywhere, so I guess that could be the one that challenges it potentially, but I don't know. I feel like he's probably less available than Bubba, but that might just be the leagues that I was in.
I feel just like a stud pitcher has a bigger impact in redraft. When Strider came up, like he was a league winner. It was something like 10 of the top 25 teams had Spencer Strider, that type of thing. Just because, it's a 1 out of 9 pitchers type of thing. And Anthony is 1 out of 14 hitters in a standard 15 team league. So just the leverage you have by having the ace pitcher is more. And I know people are desperate for pitching. They're desperate for their, there's such a dearth of any pitchers available on the wire that if someone good comes up, it just everyone wants to spend on it. So not that he's better than Roman Anthony. I feel like the amount of money that would be spent by fantasy owners is going to be much higher for Bubba Chandler.
Yeah, that's interesting. Could be right. Yeah, I think sometimes it can be a huge differential and difference maker if those guys do come up. And I think the thing with Chandler is he could provide strikeouts, right? It's like inning, quality ratios and strikeouts, even like regardless of the wins, that stuff is fluky. You just don't know if it's going to come, especially on a team like the Pirates. But you're going to get those Ks per inning, and etc., and sort of be able to still get kind of cushy ratios. So I think, yeah, I think that's potential.
Sorry to keep talking about this, but I think because of Skeens and what he did last year, I was a bit tentative on Skeens last year because I didn't know how much they'd let him pitch. And then he went 133 innings. So that is a good roadmap, a good blueprint for Chandler. He could throw 130 innings if he gets called up shortly. So Skeens has kind of opened up the options, whereas last year you're kind of like, I don't know if they're gonna let Skeens go, maybe he's only gonna go a couple innings each time, maybe he's not gonna go 5 innings, etc., and finish with 90 innings. But he has set a precedent of what Chandler can do, and so people are going to be investing with confidence, I think.
All right, now our favorite game ever to play with Dylan. Right, what is the over under May 15th on Bubba Chandler call up? Are you taking that after or before?
So May 15th, they're off, and then they have, they're in Philly, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 16th, 17th, 18th. I don't think they do it then. So if it's not the 15th, it would be maybe the series after. So I think I'm going to say before. I'm going to say this weekend. I'm going to say this upcoming weekend.
I'm saying it could be before. It's only the 5th. So I gave you a little bit of time. So yeah, you're saying before, huh? I like that. I'm not going to disagree with you. All right. We had a, sort of an interesting skeet, right? Is that what you call it? If it's on,
I think that's what they are. Yeah,
maybe a tweet, a blue sky tweet, from Sam Dykstra of course, MLB Pipeline, MILB. Said Cade Horton pitched yesterday his first time starting on 4 days rest this season. Cubs next rotation opening is Friday, which would be 4 days rest. Club also doesn't have a starter listed for Saturday yet. I don't know. It's interesting. Could Cade Horton be up this weekend? And if so, I mean, the stuff hasn't looked bad. It's kind of back. And, you know, he's pitched pretty well. It kind of looks like vintage Cade Horton. I feel like a year ago plus, we were kind of waiting. This guy was knocking on the door. And there were some conversations, I think on podcasts like this, might have been on ours, like, when is Cade Horton coming up? Could he be coming up this week? And if so, let's say he goes out there on Friday and he shoves, he gives him five innings, he strikes out seven or eight, you know, gives up four hits and a couple of walks, and all the numbers look good. How much fab, like percentage of your fab, are you going to put out there on Cade Horton if you need a starting pitcher? Let's say you're in a position, I need more starting pitching quality. You know, I'm starting whoever. I mean, name league average starting pitcher, whoever you want to throw out there.
Okay, so let me put it into actual context here. So in the 15-team auction league I'm in with Jordan Rosenblum and Brian Slack, for Fab this week, the number one pickup was Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers. Makes some sense. He pitched well in his debut. He's got Miami lined up, and you know the Dodgers have needs for pitching right now. He went for $183. The runner-up was $137. We bid something like $60 or something like that. The number two pitcher, just to show the dearth of availability on the waiver wire, was Gunnar Hoglund, who also pitched very well, but he's at the Athletics, doesn't have a good home park. Who knows if he's going to be up for how long? And he went for 74. So we're talking in the hundreds, kind of on average for a good pitcher. And I think Cade Horton would probably go for more than Gonsolin, just for like the upside dream play. So I could see him going for 150, 200. Even if he just has kind of an average outing, because the Cubs need pitching, right? They lost Justin Steele for the year. Shota Imanaga just went on the IL for a hamstring. Those could be lingering. They're rolling out Colin Ray. Got Chris Flexen is kind of penciled into the rotation. Matthew Boyd isn't someone you want to rely on. So I could easily see them call up Cade Horton because they're in first place in their division and they want to keep it that way. So yeah, I guess a long way to say I would spend, you know, $200 or so on Cade Horton. Some people won't bid that high because they're going to wait for the Bubba Chandlers, or they're going to wait for the Yuri Perez or the Clayton Kershaw, maybe, or Alex Cobb, or Andrew Painter, if I didn't say him. So yeah, I think he'll go for a lot, because just seeing like what's out there right now, Cade Povich went for $50. Kyle Harrison went for around 50, and he's like not even in the rotation yet. They said he'd be starting the bullpen. So, you know, people are desperate for pitching in redraft leagues already. So that went a long way to say people are going to spend the money, I think, and back up the truck a bit.
Yeah, I don't think you're probably wrong on that one at all. You know, I think that's probably a reasonable one to expect a decent amount of money, especially if, like I said, it's a Friday start, knowing Sunday fab, he pitches well, right? Like that's where mm-hmm. you see people get crazy, because they got time to think about it and the numbers come out and they can dig into it a little bit and start comparing things and et cetera. Looking at comments. All right, let's move on to another one that actually was recalled. No longer a prospect, but feels prospecty because he had to go down to the minor leagues. Dealt with obviously a terrible back injury in Evan Carter of the Rangers. Dylan, you've always been a big proponent of Evan Carter, a guy that, you know, I was looking at the rankings today, the updated top 500. We have him, I think, just inside the top 200. And I was sort of thinking to myself, like, all right, like, if this guy had been healthy and there was no back concerns, he'd probably be a top 100 to top 50 type of dynasty asset player, especially in OBP or points leagues. So how are we supposed to approach this? I don't know how much you've dug into the AAA numbers. There's still a lot of questions about him hitting lefties. Just some things out there. And then obviously the comments around the injury have been a little concerning, even for a guy as young as Carter.
Yeah, it's tough, eh? There's a huge, wide range of possible outcomes. Just he debuts as whatever he was, 20 years old, playoffs, World Series. He's hitting in the middle of the order against righties and lefties. He's really doing well. He's playing good defense, and it just looks like the world's his oyster. And then now, 2 years later, he can't hit lefties, it seems. He's got a chronic back injury, and who knows if that's going to be lingering. And the way the comments sound, they may be lingering, something he'll never shake. So, like, just the wide range of, he's only 22. He's only in his age 22 season. So he's got a whole like runway of improvement to come along. He could be a 20 home run, 25 stolen base guy playing, you know, good defense in center field for a pretty good team. Or he could be a guy that's a platoon who has nagging injuries his entire career. So yeah, it's tough. I think the Rangers are in flux right now. They just fired their hitting coordinator, hired Brett Boone. They just waived Leody Taveras. They sent down Jake Berger. Like, they are not messing around anymore. If you're not cutting it, you're out almost literally. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a vote of confidence for Evan Carter or if that's like extra pressure on Evan Carter. But it's tough. It's tough. It's we're kind of splitting the difference on where to put him. Like, cause he could easily be a top 75 asset. Easily, if he comes up and hits the way he was kind of showing the promise he was, or he could, you know, kind of go the way of Jared Kelenic. And I don't mean to curse him like that, but where someone has never really reached their promise and is extremely frustrating, but it's hard to cut bait. So, yeah, I don't know. We bid in that redraft league because we knew he'd come up, but, you know, we were conservative because it may just be a platoon and he wasn't really carving up AAA. He has a slash of 221, 333, 416 WRC plus below 100. It's at 96, three home runs, six stolen bases. So like he's not exactly setting the world on fire right now. But you know, he's young and he's talented. So that could all change very quickly.
And I thought you just brought up an interesting one. So I'm going to throw this one at you. We had not planned this, but yeah. What's your take? If you're a manager who's rostering Jake Berger right now, how are you handling this demotion and sort of the, you know, the news of this?
Yeah, that's tough too. I mean, I know people have cut him and I know people are taking shots because, you know, this may just be a blip, just get his head right. Like you're kind of hoping it's going to be like a Torque thing where, you know, Spencer Torkelson gets sent down, things look bleak and then he's up and now he's crushing. He's back to kind of what Torque we'd hope Torque would be. So I think you're kind of hoping that, you know, Jake Berger comes up. They're very similar hitters, huge power, you know, reasonable batting average, not great, but doesn't crush you. So yeah. And, you know, corner right, I guess as well. So yeah, I think he got a hold, but yeah, it's not a comfortable position to be in because especially if he's not doing well in AAA, and then you got to wait for a year, and then you got to hope that 2026 he comes back and does well. Like, it's tough to have a roster spot for that. So I mean, yeah, I think he got a hold because he could be up, you know, in a week or 2 weeks. It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Yeah, I don't think I really have him rostered just about. I don't think I have him rostered anywhere. He's just not really like the type of player that I tend to draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same for sure.
You know, and I'm in a lot of points and more like OBP type of formats. So, you know, he's not a guy that walks a ton. So, yeah, but, you know, realizing that, you know, he was demoted, I figured it was a worthwhile ask. All right, Dylan, I have one more bit of news we'll talk about. We're going to take a quick break first, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little top 500. We'll finish off the show. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be right back.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, we are back. So, Dylan, I had mentioned previously the Roman Anthony. There's been a little scuttlebutt, kind of entered my hat into the ring on this, regarding the Tristan Casas injury. For those that don't know, it's a torn patella tendon, correct? So there is a chance that he's probably not ready until maybe even mid-next season. Like June of next year, like wouldn't be a crazy timetable. Optimistic, probably April, maybe March. He's back in game shape. And, you know, who knows where it goes from here. Romy Gonzalez and Abraham Toro are just not up to the caliber of hitter they're going to need at first base if this team, which they invested in heavily in the offseason, is going to make the playoff run that I think they need to make this year, just ownership, etc. Let's say they do start working out Roman Anthony at first base. Okay. I know Breslow said no. They did give him reps at first base. Like, I watched it with my own eyes. I've seen him take reps at first base, I've seen him take reps with a ground, like a first base mitt. And like a ground ball machine on the side of like the Worcester dugout. So like it was discussed last year. You know, I don't think he's not an outfielder. Like, I don't think it's anything like that, but he is a big guy, left-handed bat. He is right-handed throwing, but like left-handed bat kind of fits into that first base mold and probably is an upgrade offensively, like right off the bat from Tristan Casas. And that's not even a knock on Casas. I just think that Anthony's that good of a hitter, you know. So with that said, do you still stick with your Anthony call up date? Does it maybe look a little bit better? We said like between May 15th and June 1st, he gets like a few weeks, maybe 2 to 3 weeks to kind of get first base settled. The Red Sox could certainly make a trade. I don't know what's going to be out there, what's going to be available, and what kind of assets they're going to want to throw at a first baseman for a rental, you know. So what are your thoughts on the Anthony thing? And, you know, do you think maybe he could come up and end up playing first base?
I mean, you're more plugged into that situation than me. I mean, it made sense. It was in my immediate thought, that, oh, there we go. Roman Anthony play first. And it like everything kind of lines up nicely. Then they are kind of denying it, like you said. I heard Von Grissom is taking some reps at first as well. I think it depends on like the probability he'll play first. If he will play first base, then yeah, I think he'll be up in that time frame you're talking about. If he's not going to play first, then I don't know. It's kind of everything's kind of thrown out of whack, because who then moves to first, or they trade for someone, and then that means like it's not a replacement of Cassis. There's not a hole in the lineup. So I don't know. Again, I think it's a wide range of outcomes. I think it could accelerate his timeline. He could be up, you know, in a week or two, like he said, playing first base, which I think is the ideal fantasy outcome, because you'll have outfield and first base next year. But if not, if they're dead set on him not playing first base and he's going to be an outfielder, then it kind of will. That's a bad outcome, because I think his playing time is going to be called into question. They'll rotate people in and out. They may not be happy with who they have at first base. And so like, it'll be just kind of a mix and match situation. And that uncertainty, I don't think is what we want. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not really giving an answer at all. I think it just depends on how committed they are to having Roman Anthony play first or not play first. And if he is going to play first, then that accelerates the timeline for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree there with everything you just said, 100%. All right, let's move a little bit into the top 500 conversation. And let's start it and kick it off with Tristan Cassis. sort of how do we handle that as rankers and dynasty managers? I know I sort of pushed to kind of push him down quite a bit, almost like into the 300s. He's out for the remainder of this season, sometime next season. That starts to cut into some of like the youthful value of Tristan Cassis. You know, we don't often see hitters miss that sort of like substantial amount of time where, you know, he might be like close to 27, you know, by the time he's fully back. I mean, I think he'll be back next year when he's 26, but it might take him some time. Took him some time last year coming off of a big injury. I think the other thing is he's been pretty injury plagued.
Yeah.
He's a very large human being, 6'4" and just very broad and you know, a bigger guy. So just, I don't know how the legs are going to hurt. He's already a pretty slow runner. He's only probably due to get slower. So yeah, I don't really know where Cassis could go from here. I don't know if he ever really gets back to how we were valuing him, you know, a few months ago even.
Yeah, again, it's tough, right? It's a huge range of outcomes. I think it totally depends on your competitive window. If you're not competing, I'm just looking at what we have of the update here, and we have like, you know, Clark Schmidt, Yusei Kikuchi kind of in the same spot, sort of the back end of the 200s. Obviously, you would rather have Tristan Cassis than Yusei Kikuchi if you're rebuilding. But if you're competing, you know, maybe you trade Cassis for Kikuchi or Clark Schmidt or, you know, Bobby Miller. Well, maybe not Bobby Miller this year, but, you know, David Festa, who's kind of in the same ballpark. Maybe you do that because the near-term value is going to be far better, and you don't want to have to play the game of what's Cassis going to be when he comes back. So yeah, it's a wide range of outcomes, and I think it totally depends on your team, your roster construction, on how you want to play it. It kind of goes back to the Jake Berger thing too. Like if you're rebuilding, you may want to take a shot on maybe grabbing Berger, because it could be a 30 home run bat that you can afford to just kind of hope hits, like lottery ticket hits, not hits with the bat, which is also a question you may be asking. But if you're competing, you know, you don't want that headache of trying to figure out what it is. So these wide range of outcomes are the ones that are a headache if you have the player, if you roster the player, but there are, you know, opportunities for everybody, because there's going to be someone who wants to take that shot. There is someone who wants to take that shot on Jared Kelenic, not to pile on a Jared Kelenic today. There is that guy that wants to take the shot on Jake Berger. There is that guy that wants to take the shot on Tristan Cassis, Bo Bichette, these types of guys who are, you know, not, they have the tantalizing upside, but they just haven't really come close to hitting it recently. And so, you know, that wide range of outcomes is a huge opportunity in dynasty leagues, and that's why it's so fascinating to play dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Another thing that I think makes dynasty leagues a lot of fun is prospects, and especially young, extremely talented prospects where you can definitely dream on superstardom and, you know, top whatever 20 player first two round sort of upside, and you know, you get them for lower fab dollars, or you know, you pick them up off your waiver wire during the complex league season, something along those lines. You get them in your FYPD, and I think we have a trio of players that kind of fall into all those different buckets in terms of how you might have acquired them. One being Leo DeVries of the San Diego Padres. Another being Jesus Mate of the Brewers, and Sebastian Walcott of the Rangers. And we kind of have them all clustered at the back end of like the first 100 in the top 500, kind of pushed for all these guys to be very similarly ranked. I think it's really close right now. Mate and DeVries are switch hitters, and you know, right now DeVries is just, the numbers he's putting up in the Midwest League are outrageous, and the underlying stuff is really good. The contact rate's really good. Swing strike rate's the lowest of the three, and they all are showing pretty good skills at this point. He's also showing power. He's showing the ability to hit the ball in the air. He's showing the ball to hit the ball in the air to the pull side, which is one thing that Mate is still kind of mastering, is getting the ball in the air consistently. He's a little more aggressive, I'll say, than the other two. And then I think Walcott, being sort of the biggest body, best athlete, also has tremendous upside, may be higher than the other two. Digging into Walcott's numbers, if I might just sort of go on a rant here for a second.
Please.
Everything's really good. The slash line's kind of flat. It's almost as if he's had absolutely zero good luck, but hasn't had tremendously bad luck. So it's a decent sort of slash line. I think it's like a flat 300 batting average on balls in play. So kind of just like flat luck. He's hitting the ball, I think, in the air like 68% of the time. It's like a 40-41% fly ball rate. It's like a 27-28% line drive rate. The pull rate is pretty high. Swing and strike rate is reasonable. It was like 10%-ish, which is pretty good, down quite a bit from what it was a few years ago when he had all those concerns about his swing and miss. Swing rate is good. He's walking quite a bit. It's only like a 21% strikeout rate, and he's really young for the level. I kind of feel like he's somebody where like we could come back to this in 3 weeks and be like, yep, Sebastian Walcott caught fire and hit six home runs over three series and has batted 400 for the last 3 weeks, right? And stole seven bases. Like it's one of those runs. I think we're on the cusp of it, because all the underlying stuff looks really, really good. So I wouldn't get too concerned by the slash line. We know the EVs have always been good. The angles have always been pretty good. So yeah, I don't think there's much, if anything, for us to be concerned about here, Dylan. What do you think about that trio? I know we haven't gotten the first sort of full Robo Scout, everything kind of out there. But how are you feeling about those three, and sort of what are you seeing in the numbers?
Love all three. I think it's like you it's hard to rank them. So you got Walcott, 19 years old in Double A, so he's the closest to making it to the majors. He's showing like the ability to be a better than average hitter for sure. The exit velocities, like you said, are good. The angles are good. He doesn't chase too much. His contact's fine. And just the fact that he's so young, it just means he's going to be great. Funnily enough, he has six stolen bases and two home runs this year. So he's, you know, kind of added double digit steals to his portfolio. Then you got Leo DeVries, one level below, but it's the Padres, and we know how aggressive they are. And he is, you know, 1 year younger than Walcott and one level lower, and, you know, kind of basically doing even better than Walcott, like you said. So he's showing like 25 to 30 home run pop. So you can't really go wrong with DeVries either. And then Jesus Madé, who's, you know, one level below that and 1 year younger than that as well, who is kind of like all of the above, like maybe not a year younger. I think he's about 6 months younger than DeVries. I don't know. I don't want to put you on the spot, but he's probably got more stolen bases. So sort of more of a well-rounded profile.
I honestly think it might be 6 months. Walcott might be 6 months older than DeVries. And I think that Madé might be like 6 months younger. Like it might be like a year split.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're all great. They're all great. I love the fact that we have them bunched together because I think that that makes a lot of sense. The only one I have actually is Madé. So, you know, I'm rooting for him to be the one that emerges. But I mean, I think we were in like the prospect 180Ps that Chris Welsh has. Like we were the aggressive ones on DeVries and at Walcott in the last couple of years. So that's looking pretty good.
I remember 2 years ago, I took Walcott maybe in the second round. Like 15th overall, and people were like, oh, aghast. And now, like, it's like, yeah, that's like, I think it's the reason that I was so crazy on Madé is like, we just see these elite sort of talents. They're playing the right position. They're showing athleticism. The reports are good. The data is good. The surface level stats are good. Like, it's just, all right, like, why question it? Like, those are the guys that you want to go in and you want to try to be aggressive on. And I think you see that sort of throughout this list. I'll say one for me. I don't know if you can maybe call one out in a second. I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot that maybe you moved up, whether it's a major leaguer or a prospect, you know, who made a significant jump up. I'll say for me, one in particular that jumped a ton was George Lombard Jr. Mm-hmm. I think he moved up like 300 spots. We got him onto the 500. He was on the last one. Somebody that, you know, we got great reports about consecutive springs. He's now producing, gets called up to double A. So like now the timeline is accelerated too. When you consider his age, the level that he's at, sort of things that he can do, the trust that he has in the organization. Like it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, if Anthony Volpe doesn't really start to produce, if Lombard supplants him within a year. You know, if he really continues to hit and you know, he's putting up good numbers over a full season in double A, I think he's another one that could hit, you know, could really be of value to dynasty managers that have Lombard. I have him a whole bunch of places because he was much easier to acquire than a lot of these other guys. But, you know, I do think that he's maybe a little bit closer to that trio of shortstops than people probably even realize. The feedback is loud and, you know, he's a big body, good athlete, added muscle this year. And we kind of saw what he could do in spring training when he mashed and had some big moments in major league games. So, you know, I don't know how many shares you have of George Lombard Jr. out there, sort of what your excitement level is, how the robot's looking at him, that sort of thing.
I don't have any George Lombard Jr. Because he hadn't performed. He hadn't really done much. He didn't really show power. And so Robiscat was a bit lukewarm on him. And like then all the loud reports were coming in, all the top 100 feedback. And just it looks like he's added strength, all that stuff. So I was late to the party. I was a bit too reliant on the robot. And, you know, that's my bad. But yeah, everything we're hearing is just arrow way up. And I guess by bringing him up 300 spots, we believe in him for sure. And the guy I want to talk about is Hunter Brown. We moved him up, you know, 50 spots or so. And, you know, we may not have even done enough. I happened to pick him up in my home league. Someone dropped him after that. I think it was like 9 earned runs in 2 innings. Rage drop. And I picked him up just because the underlying seemed good. And I looked like a genius with that one. Because in the last calendar year, Hunter Brown, 190 innings, has a 16-6 win record. I know we care about win-loss records a lot here. And an ERA of 2.32. I don't know where that is ranking-wise in the last calendar year, but it's better than Chris Sale. It's better than Tarek Skubal. It's behind Paul Skeens, but he's just been lights out. And, you know, we probably didn't even boost him enough. It's hard for me to kind of reconcile the fact that he's a top 100 dynasty asset, but he definitely is. If you are not assessing him at that value, I think you should with confidence, because he's done nothing ever since that one terrible outing at the beginning of last year to kind of like show that this has been a fluke. He's been sustaining it for over a year. Still very young, on a good team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I like Hunter Brown. I think we've seen a lot of good kind of young pitching talent move up. I think, you know, Mackenzie Gore, we've moved up as well.
Yeah, I really shoved him. I've watched a lot of Gore this year for whatever reason. I think I like to watch James Wood if I'm doing minor league games or have like a Monday where there's not really any minor league games yet or early games. Just caught myself watching a lot of Gore with the Nationals. And yeah, the stuff is like all there and back. It was kind of the guy that we thought he was 4 years ago as a prospect. Mm-hmm. And it's just high school pitching prospects. It's such a long and winding road that, like, no matter what, it seems like they don't really get to where they're supposed to be till they're 24, 25. And that's kind of just like a rule of thumb with pitchers. There's very few guys that are in the major leagues and good, you know, like good mid rotation guys are better before 24, 25. So I think we're kind of seeing that with Gore as well. And the numbers bear it out. Strikeouts are great, really low walk rate. You know, he's got a good ERA, and the ERA estimators, I think, are even more optimistic. So, you know, that's always great to see when a guy is performing and then the ERA estimators are kind of behind it going, it could be better, actually. It's like, all right. You know, that's when we start to jump in with both feet. And he'll go deeper into starts, too, you know. I think that's my one issue as a Trevor McGill manager, a guy that has him rostered all over, is like, he's still only going to go five. Even in his best outings, like you're not going to see like those seven inning starts, that sort of thing. So, I think you look at someone like Gore, who's still very, very young, name that definitely wants to move up. Last one that I'll throw out here, kind of both hurts our hearts, because I've always been a Bo Bichette fan. We were really pretty aggressive with him in terms of, you know, how we ranked him this offseason. You know, we were back in. We were like, hey, we had this guy at 72. He stayed at 72 in December, February update, the March update, and then the late March update. So, like, he was consistently, I think, 72. Like, we were like, all right, that's right where he is. We feel good about that spot. We dropped him 100 spots, and it's not back. And I don't know if it's ever going to come back. Something is just very off. And you know, we sometimes see this, guys that are promising, and when they have all their twitch and athleticism, their peak years are kind of their early years. Andrew Benintendi wasn't different from this. And, you know, they kind of have that big year where we think they're going to boom the next year and become a superstar. And it's gone the opposite direction with Bo Bichette. So as a Blue Jays owner or fan, to the owner, as far as I know, you know,
not yet.
A Blue Jays fan, why don't you take the floor here before we wrap this up?
So you want to go out on a bum note, huh? It's exactly like you said. We believed in the offseason. We thought it was a bounce back, going to be a bounce back. It's his walk year. So, you know, like the narrative of like, he's going to put up the good numbers, betting on himself, et cetera, et cetera. And he even started off pretty well. We talked about in the first week how it's like he was hitting like 350 and he was spraying it to all fields. He was hitting it hard. It looked pretty good. And then it's just the wheels have fallen off, like it has for a lot of the Jays hitters in recent times. Andrés Giménez started off huge. He had like four home runs in the first week, and now he's below the Mendoza line. So, you know, it's the ups and downs, but it just, like you said, it doesn't look like he's got it anymore. Hopefully that will change. You know, he's still a average or better major league hitter, I think. But it's just, he doesn't run anymore. And, you know, he hasn't hit a home run. He hadn't hit a home run in like 60 games. It was like back to Memorial Day last year. Of course, you know, he didn't play a full season. He missed a lot of time, but still, like, over almost a year of not hitting a home run, that's, you know, that's not pretty. So yeah, hard to see. You know, I might at this spot we have him in at 173, you know, I might trade for him if that's how the Bo Bichette manager values him. You know, he's worth taking a shot. It's these wide range of outcomes that I've been talking about all all episode. But yeah, it's a tough one.
Little moment of silence there for Bo Bichette. He's even lost Dylan. But yeah, go check out the Dynasty Top 500. We've been doing, you know, a ton of content. Going to have some more Robo Scout stuff rolling out. I'm going to be doing sort of a look at a couple of prospects that are surging up that are just outside of our Dynasty Top 500, but are, you know, maybe potential ads when we update at the end of next month. We've been staying pretty steady here now for what, 1, 2, 3, 4 months more or less of updating the list, because we did release the December list like the last day of the year, just about. It was like the 29th, I think.
Yeah.
When it came out. So not updating until February, you know, it's just an extra week there. Kind of made sense. So we've pretty much updated every month since December. And, you know, I think we're seeing the list come together nicely. So go over there, take a look at that. Obviously, all of Dylan's RoboScout stuff. Hot sheets have been up. If you're into the draft or college baseball, a lot of content pumping out now. It's the end of the college baseball season, and we're really hitting, you know, the stride with all the draft information and the silly season with all the stuff and stories and numbers and narratives that will come out of that. So great time to subscribe to Baseball America if you aren't. If you are, thanks again for supporting us, and thanks for tuning in and listening. Have a great week.
Cheers.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.